Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. Today, our special guest is Nathan Elotti, web designer, digital marketing strategist, and the author of Freelance Jumpstart. And we're going to talk about pricing for designers. This episode is brought to you by Tiny Reminder. Tired of nagging people? Build a simple form, set a reminder schedule, and add recipients. We'll keep sending reminders until they submit a response. This tool is forever free. Sign up today at tinyreminder.com. Hey, Nathan.
Hey, Jane, how's it going?
Doing great. Thank you so much for making it today.
Oh, thank you for having me. It definitely is an honor to be on the show, and I greatly do appreciate it. Like as I mentioned to you prior to us getting on the call, I followed you for some time, so I definitely have similar thoughts to you and similar beliefs to you as well as it turns to business and freelancing.
Fantastic. So we're going to start with a short questionnaire. And the question number one is, Nathan, what do you do for a living?
Yeah, so I'm a freelance web designer. I do web design. I'm self-taught. So initially, I'm going to go a little bit in the past. Initially, you know, went to school for mathematics and engineering. And then I started working for a web hosting company. And then I started, everybody wanted to do websites. I was like, man, these websites picking up a lot of momentum. Maybe I should learn something. So through tutorials online and a lot of practice and a lot of mistakes, I learned web design. So I started offering my skills and services with web design and digital marketing strategy.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great. You actually answered question number two, which is your background. Well, then I'd love to hear more about your current empire sort of things, because you were doing courses, you have a podcast, in addition to your design practice.
Yeah, so and we'll probably get to this later in the episode, but more specifically, I have quite a bit of things I'm doing at the moment. I believe the main service all still stems from web design and digital marketing strategy. And the reason I mention that is I was building websites for people and I realized I wasn't necessarily giving them everything they needed. I was building a website, but clients really don't want a website. They want a result. So I was building a website thinking I was answering what they needed, but really they wanted traffic to the website, and then they wanted that traffic to do something. So that led me to pairing web design with digital marketing strategy, because people need a strategy of how they're going to execute on what their goals are. And I also realized how I was set up was very heavily towards building websites. I started to need to create content around getting people to the website, teaching people about lead magnets, teaching people about business, teaching people about pricing, because a lot goes into trying to get someone to take a certain action. And a lot of the content I produce and I create feeds into how to get certain people to take those actions. So it's really just trying to expand upon, you know, what I started with web design and serve other areas.
That's fantastic strategy, because if you just act as a designer, and if you try, even if you try to recommend something else, they're still going to, I don't know, think, hire someone else. But if you provide things as a package, that's a perfect one-stop shop.
No, exactly. You said it. And that was my thought and my mentality in trying to help them with that.
Awesome. What does your typical day look like?
Typical day for me, really just depends on what I'm working on. I think recently things have been different with me trying to finish the book and the course I'm building. But normally it just depends on what project I'm working on. I may start that project off brainstorming, trying to map out what I'm going to do. There may be some wireframes. There may be some designing in Illustrator. Mm-hmm. Just what I'm going to do and how it's going to look. There may be some research involved, looking at other websites and other trends. I tend to keep up with other web designers online just to see what other people are doing and Maybe it's something I can try that's new. So it may also involve watching YouTube videos, reading different people's blog articles just to get a different perspective, just to see what other people are doing as well. Somewhere along there, I'm going to take a break from what I'm working on, and I am going to, you know, do something like prepare a podcast episode or plan out what my next couple of episodes are going to be, because the podcast also acts as advertisement for my services as well. So there's a mutual benefit there. So a lot pretty much goes into the day. I try to assign certain tasks on certain days. So Tuesdays and Wednesdays is really trying to get ready for my podcast episode. Monday, a little bit, about half of Tuesday. Thursdays and the end of Fridays is normally me working on something. Weekends, I'm normally working on client projects as well. But yeah, so it just depends on what's going on and what specifically the day is.
Mm-hmm. What do you enjoy the most and the least about your work?
I enjoy solving problems. I really like design because someone has an idea. They may not know how to execute on that idea, but you help them bring a thought to life. And I like that. I like bringing something that was imaginary and making it a reality. I do enjoy that very much. One thing that I would say maybe that I don't enjoy too much is there are many ways to get something done, and sometimes the only way to test something out is to try it in market and see how it performs. But sometimes you're working with a client and they have certain preferences, or they have certain revisions that they would like. Sometimes I don't enjoy the revision process too much because I try to get things right. Because I try to get things right the first time, and I don't mind revisions. It's just those revisions have to be rooted in some type of goal, or it have to be rooted in some type of reason. It can't be subjective. But sometimes when I work with clients, the revisions are subjective. It's just, I wish it was this color, like for what reason? And sometimes that can be a battle, but I take it upon myself as a professional to make sure I get it right the first time, or I at least explain why I did what I did.
Mm-hmm. Nathan, what is your next big thing? You mentioned a book and a course, I think.
Yeah, the next big thing is something I've been working on for some time. It has been absolutely crazy trying to get it completed. But I first had the idea to create a book. I thought about all the unique experiences I went through just learning about web design and learning trying to start my own business. There's a lot of things that school doesn't teach you, because I even went to graduate school for business. They didn't teach me how to start my own business. They didn't teach me how to register with my state and my country. They didn't teach me how to file the proper paperwork or do taxes. It's all these things you just learn on your own. So I started writing a book, Freelance Jumpstart, teaching freelance creatives the business of freelancing and what to prepare for. And I started realizing a book wasn't enough to contain everything that I wanted to talk about. So I expanded that to a course. And in the midst of me trying to finish the course, there's been tons of roadblocks, but it's very close to being complete. And the course has interviews, videos, and certain things I'm showing people that you just can't fully accomplish in a book. So that's a lot of what I've been working on with that, just trying to share everything I've learned in starting and running a freelance business.
Well, that sounds like a great project. Are you teaching specifically designers or freelancers in general?
Freelancers in general. I tend to speak from a perspective of more of a designer and consultant. But it really is for freelancers in general. I didn't want to get too specific in terms of designers. But the unique thing that I'm open with is I've showed the book to a couple of different people. and if there's something that is not in the book that people want to know about, I will literally add it because I have tons of experiences to draw from. But yeah, it's really to freelancers in general, because a lot of freelancing is very similar in terms of the business aspect, but the services we all offer are different, but the business structures are very similar.
Absolutely. I would like to say that, you know, designers are probably at the most disadvantageous position as opposed to developers, for example. And I can just see how developers get a single client and work with them for like 5 months in a row on a big project. With design, like 1 week, 2 weeks max, you're out. You are looking for another project. You have to repeat all the same things much more, you know, consistently and fast.
No, you're right. Designers. Well, it's. I was just talking to someone about this the other day. Designers have more. I'm going to say power. Designers have more power than they think, because yes, you need something developed and you need it to work and function properly. So the back end needs to be there. That's true. But if something doesn't look good, people won't interact with it. Regardless of what people say, if something doesn't look appealing or aesthetically the right way, or it doesn't look intuitive enough, you're not going to get the result you want. A good example of this is Apple. A lot of the products Apple builds and Apple offers, they're not the first ones to do it. And some of the things they make, it's not the best working piece of equipment. But the fact that design was thought from beginning to end in many Apple products, people use it. So design has a large part in helping people take a specific action that is a little stronger than what you can say with the development. But yeah, I think designers have more power than people think.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now let's proceed to our main topic, and that is pricing. And pricing specifically in design industry for design jobs. I'm sure that in your video posts and everything, you are preaching value-based pricing. There is a number of options you can try. I'd love you to maybe recap your story or give a general overview of what you recommend in terms of pricing these days.
So just all the pricing strategies or just value-based pricing specifically?
I think all of them, so that we have a whole variety on hand.
Okay, yeah. So definitely what Jane is referring to is I've discussed pricing on my website and my podcast, and there's different pricing strategies that are available, and I believe that pricing is not a decision, it's a strategy. A lot of times people ask the question, how much do you charge for fill in the blank? And then we as freelance creatives try to decide on what we're going to charge. But really, pricing is not a decision. It's a strategy. And based on the strategy you want to go forward with, that determines what pricing structure and strategy you tend to use. So it just depends on what you're trying to get accomplished. And just quickly, so I'll run through some of the pricing structures that come up the most in business. There's cost plus pricing. This is where you maybe buy something and then you add some margin to it. So, for example, you may have maybe you purchase a template and then a customer wants you to redesign the template a little bit. So you bought the template for $200 and then you add $300 more. So you're just adding margin to that. And that comes from consumer goods. We tend to see that at the grocery store and other places. They're just adding margin to whatever they paid for it. Competitor-based pricing. That is, you're looking at your competitors and you're trying to see where you fit. I know I've done this in the past when people would ask about web design. I wasn't sure what to charge, so I looked at other people to see what they were charging and tried to make my price comparable. So there's competitor-based pricing. The problem with that is you don't want to get into a pricing war. You want to get into a value war. When it comes to competitor-based pricing,
and exactly.
Mm-hmm. Trying to price just off of, you know, comparisons alone doesn't do your uniqueness justice. You know, so that there's a drawback there for sure. There is flat rate pricing where you just decide on one flat fee. How much is a website? $1,000. And you charge $1,000 for whomever you're working with for a website. That's also the case with bundling your services. Maybe you bundle services together and it's one flat fee. There is hourly-based pricing. I think we're all familiar with that. You're trading time for money. If you work, you know, 5 hours, you multiply that by your hourly rate, and you get what you're going to charge your particular client. But you can't charge them for administrative tasks. Like maybe you're writing an email or maybe you're putting together an invoice. Can you really charge them for that? Is that a billable hour? You know, that's a question that comes up with hourly-based pricing. And finally, value-based pricing, which is you're determining your price based upon the value you're creating for your client. So if you're working with a client and you're able to get them more customers and more sales, and maybe those sales total $20,000, then when you tell them you're charging $12,000, it's not as shocking because you showed them how much more money you're going to help make them based on value. So that's a quick rundown of different pricing structures and the differences.
Yeah, I have a whole lot of questions we should discuss here. Well, maybe let's start with value-based pricing because it's probably the hardest to pull off. It's amazing if you are, for example, a conversion rate consultant and the ROI, the return on investment of your work is obvious. You can calculate that, track that, etc. But in design work, let's say making a new website, designing a new logo, how do you track that return on investment, that value?
The important factor, and it is more difficult with design, but the more important factor is you have to see and show your particular client or potential client that there is value in what you are doing. So let's just take a logo, for example. The first thing you can do is capture where they are. So capture maybe how many website visitors they're getting, how many social media followers they have, how many sales they're getting on a normal basis. But here's the thing you could do with a logo. You can use something like usabilityhub.com. And you can run a 5-second test. So take their current logo, put it in Usability Hub, send out a link to different people, and they'll show them the logo for 5 seconds and it'll go away. And then they'll ask a question, what do you remember? Or what do you think this logo means? Different people will give different responses. And ask your client, write down 5 things that you think people get from your logo, and your client will write down those 5 things. Then you run this test on Usability Hub. Now, if it doesn't match what your client says, you can just show them that, and they can see that they've been using a logo that does not do what they want it to do. Now, there's no price attached to that yet, but that's why I mentioned capturing some of the other things like website visitors and sales and all these other factors. Because you're trying to build a case of where they are before you work with them. Then you can start crafting, okay, not only can I build you a new logo, but we can put together a social media campaign about why you redid your logo and how it best serves your business. So now you're turning creating a logo into a marketing opportunity. And if you were to run that, any incremental website visitors or any incremental social media follows can be attributed to the work that you're doing. And then at the end of the process, you can run the same test on Usability Hub. And if people are actually saying what they're supposed to when looking at the logo, there's value in that. Now, I think as a designer, it's up to you to determine what you want to get paid. And if sales go up, you know, you can match that accordingly, but you can also talk about how long the logo is going to last. It's not just a quick logo that's for 1 year. Maybe the logo will last 10 years. Okay, divide your price by 10 years. Who wouldn't pay that? You know, so it's just a way of framing the value you're offering instead of just a hard number in the case of a design.
Mm-hmm. So I see, for me, value-based pricing was mostly about charging rates higher than typical in the industry, because I do understand the business of the client and I can bring more value than just merely design. That's what value-based pricing means for me. Your way of framing things is even more interesting because you are attaching similar marketing services to that, which is not very possible for most of designers, but in your case, it definitely works wonders.
No, true. I think anybody can do it. Like you said, there's other services that you can offer as well. But I will say value-based pricing tends to work best with people who are familiar with their business and they know what they want. If your client cannot tell you what their time is worth or, you know, how much they make in a day, you know, they actually have to make money and want to make money. So they have to be good at business. You know, so I will say, yeah, that caveat for value-based pricing to work, your client actually has to want to do good at business. So whatever it is you're going to produce, they're going to use it to do something. You know, if they're kind of passive or they're not as intuitive at business, there may be some coaching involved as well. But ultimately, I think value-based pricing can work for any type of freelancer. But it really just depends upon the right type of client that you're working with.
Mm-hmm. I would like to ask you, do you think it's worth publishing your prices on your site? Or do you think it's better to, you know, not reveal them until the engagement is on?
I almost want to say yes and no. and I've done both. I would say yes. And the reason I say yes is there is a certain minimum that you want to work with. And if someone is not willing to pay a minimum amount, then, you know, in a sense, you don't want to waste your time or lose any time in working with someone that never wants to pay your minimum. So it's advantageous to have your sites display what your price is so that people can read it and they self-select. The reason I was saying no is you may find a project that actually interests you, and it may be something that you want to be a part of, and you don't want the price to miss that opportunity. A good example of this is I remember I spoke with Ryan Battles. He's a developer, and he had a project, and he's like, the project didn't really pay as much as I wanted, but it was with Google. So if mm-hmm. he was basing it on price alone, he wouldn't have taken it. But since it was with Google, he's like, oh, sure. And that expanded his portfolio, and he got to work with better clients on the same level as Google. So that's why I say yes and no, but I tend to say use your questionnaire to screen out people. Your questionnaire may have a question that says, are you willing to pay more than fill in the blank? Mm-hmm. That may not be something that disqualifies the client, but it can give you an idea of, okay, is this person comfortable with paying over $2,000? Okay. You know, I don't know what I'm going to charge them at the end because I need more details, but at least I know they're willing, or at least I know they're on the fence. So that's why I say yes and no. I wrestle with that. What do you think about that question?
I'm totally for publishing prices, particularly because over years I've skewed everything towards productized consulting, meaning most popular things I do for people, I already know approximately how much time and effort goes into that.
Good,
even considering the fact that all businesses are different, I have specific landing pages for each service, and I always reserve the right to determine the scope. I do promise the highest return on their investment and on their money, but I do reserve my own opportunity to stop when it's reasonable. And usually it's never been a problem that, they go off to me and go like, Jane, can you please audit two more screens? No, it doesn't usually go like that. It's usually enough value in what it is. And second, I usually kind of bake in the margins for potential floors or anything So I charge a lot, and then I deliver even more. But in case there is a problem, it's still fair because it's a lot. Does it make sense? So I'm not shy about sticking with specific numbers and publishing them.
No, you're right. I'm glad you shared that. And that's something that I had to arrive at. I know when I was first freelancing, I was nervous because I didn't want my prices to scare people off. And I didn't want people to judge me off my prices alone. But the one thing I will say is, and I'm just talking to anyone out there who's maybe nervous to publish their pricing publicly, there are some people who want a certain task done and they're looking for professionals to do that task. And anybody who is below a certain price, they're not even going to look at them. You may be an awesome designer, but you publish your prices and you put $500. There's somebody like, I'm going to say Accenture Consulting. They may look at that and say $500 for design. That person's probably not good. So don't, I'm bringing this up to say, don't be nervous about publishing your prices. You can always explain the whole process of what you're doing. Like I said, you don't have to be like me. I was scared I was going to chase people off with the price. But there's a certain type of client who is looking to say, I need this work done. Oh, $10,000 is reasonable. So, you know, don't be too nervous about that. It really depends on the client you're working with.
Absolutely. I see a lot of freelancers, they start out and they think that being cheap is a good thing. But actually, it's quite the opposite, as you mentioned. And it's much better to be overpriced and to remain an amazing dream in the eyes of your website visitors rather than being like, oh, wow, why is it so cheap? It shouldn't be like, you know.
Exactly.
And maybe they don't hire you this time, but they can, you know, gather up some budget for their next project and still come up to you. But you're going to be amazing in their eyes. And one more thing that comes together with a high price tag is positioning or niching down to a specific job. Because that, in combination with high prices, works magic.
No, you're right. Trying to be all things to all people. Someone doesn't know what exactly to come to you for. I think that takes just some self-realization and really looking at your skills hard and say, what are you good at? But also, what do you enjoy doing? I'll be honest, I can make a flyer. I think making flyers is not a problem, but I don't enjoy spending 3 hours on a flyer making revisions because it's just a flyer. You know, so I can, that tells me already, I don't enjoy flyers. I should not offer that as one of my main services. I don't have to offer that, you know? So I think that just takes time for you to say, what do you enjoy doing? What are you good at? If you're weak in a certain area, where do you need to improve? And then thinking about, the work you enjoy and how you can do that more frequently. And then that leads you down the path of niching down or picking a specific area you want to focus on in terms of your freelancing.
Absolutely. For example, you mentioned, well, we discussed logo jobs, and I have not designed a logo as a standalone thing for ages, because a logo is something like, I just don't want to argue with people and try to find value in a simple, you know, letter combination. I'd rather design, you know, high value interface or highly converting website and just say like, this logo, you know, goes with it, you know, whatever. But I just don't want to focus on it because the value is not obvious. Or maybe you're, you know, branding guru and you can do what you just described, you know, explain the brand value and want to spend time on that, then maybe it's your choice.
True. And I think you bring up an excellent point because that's another thing. I can do logos. I don't enjoy it because there's so, in the terms of a web design, there's so many other things that are a part of it. And logos, it's like, oh, yes, you need a logo, but there's a lot more work on this end that I need to take care of. So you know, I haven't done many logos. The ones I have done, clients have been satisfied. But same thing to your point, the wrestling with trying to get something done when a logo and brand is just one piece of a larger puzzle. I think that introduces the concept of networking and getting with other creatives and getting with people you're comfortable with. Maybe I create a website for somebody and they like it and they're satisfied. A year goes by and we're evaluating their numbers and maybe they want to talk about UX. I can pass them on to Jane and say, okay, look, Jane can actually evaluate this with different eyes. She's an excellent creative. You should work with her. Now I can focus on making another website while Jane does the UX part and I still did my client a good service. You can do the same thing with passing on logos, but you have to know other creatives that you can work with.
Yeah, that's a big thing. Usually, like, you should take as a, you know, the basic axiom is that there is always a lot of client work out there. And if you're experiencing a lack of leads, that might mean, you know, that you are not a good fit or you might have to tweak something in your value proposition. But most likely, if you pass on the work that you that's not a good fit, nothing's going to happen. You're not like breeding competitors or something. You're just partnering up with people.
No, true, true, I would say. So partnering up can definitely help you niche down a little better.
Next thing I want to discuss is hourly versus daily versus flat. It's probably something like that. Have you worked with hourly billing in your life or with daily, for example?
Mainly hourly billing. Work with that. I think hourly has its place. Me personally, hourly billing just reminds me of the different hourly jobs I've had. you know, just working at like McDonald's and things like that. There's nothing wrong with hourly pricing, but you have to recognize when is the best case to use it. And with hourly pricing, I think when I first came up with a price, I made up something. I think I just made up $50. And the reason I made that up is $50 felt good to say, thinking about the previous jobs where I only made $15 an hour, $25 an hour. $50 made it seem like, wow, I'm getting a lot of value. But honestly, it didn't let me reward myself for getting more efficient. So maybe I tried to do something and it took me 5 hours, but the next time I did it, it takes 2 hours. I didn't necessarily get more money, even though I'm producing the same amount of value. So that hourly pricing made me, I saw some holes in it. I think hourly pricing works best if you connect it to a predefined length of time. So if you have a bank of hours you're going to use in a week or a bank of hours you're going to use in a certain day, you can say, okay, you have me available. I can work for you 6 hours a day. Tell me how many days you want me available. When you anchor it to a certain length of time, that makes sense and it becomes somewhat of a flat rate. But on its own, you're not really rewarded for your time if you get better.
Absolutely. You're just hitting the most important point here. Because after you call out a big hourly rate, the next thing you have to do is to apologize and explain that, you know, we're going to get that done in 20 hours, I promise, or something like that. And that's, you're just anchoring yourself to a flat rate again. And it comes with all these uncomfortable apology thing, and it just doesn't make any sense.
No, true, true. But it's not all bad because I think as a creative, you do need to figure out what your time is per hour. I know since I figured out what my time is per hour, it helps me make decisions. As I mentioned, I'm working on the book, Freelance Jumpstart. I found a way to manually transcribe the videos I created for the course. So I found a way to transcribe it by using my audio equipment, and it works. It works in Google Docs. But then I had to go back and check it for accuracy and then check it for sentence structure and then make sense of it. And I said to myself, Nathan, you're working on this just trying to save time, but it's taking you almost an hour to try to fix this. You could have spent this hour working for a client. Just go pay a transcription service and move on. So I saw I was wasting time doing that. But that's because I knew what an hour is worth for me. You don't have to tell your client, but at least internally, you need to know what an hour is worth for you. Just like same thing with flat rate pricing. If you're working with a client and the flat rate is $5,000, you need to know what an hour is worth for you so you can mentally know how long is too long in working on this project. But you can't say that if you don't know what that is.
I totally agree with that. That's another great point. You should be confident, you know, making these purchasing decisions, because as a high level, high value professional, you're going to need a few SaaS services, subscriptions that you're going to buy, good hosting, you know, a few people who maybe an assistant, maybe someone who's going to do transcription or audio editing for you. All these little things you have to be confident in buying, because you're making an investment in your high value, in your high hourly rate.
No, you're right. You're right. So hourly pricing is not bad. It has its place, but you have to definitely know when to use it.
Let's talk about daily. I currently do daily when it's not a typical, like when it's not one of the packages, I stick to daily. And the reason I do that is because it shifts the focus from little hourly details towards larger chunks of money, bigger scheme of things, and generally speaking, just shifts clients' attention. What do you think of daily pricing?
I think daily pricing is necessary as well. I know there's a lot of freelancers in New York where their clients, they say, what's your daily rate? That's a normal question in New York City. They want to know your daily rate, and you're going to have to calculate that in a similar fashion. I am curious, Jane, to know, how did you come up with your daily rate?
I just kept increasing it from time to time, seriously. So I'm quite open about sharing that. But you have to share about yours after that.
Yeah, for sure.
I started out in 2012 at Odesk. Now it's Upwork. And I started at $16 an hour. I grew after a year towards something around $50 an hour. But really, that was the edge, because at that point, it's really hard to get clients out there. And then I hiked my level, I wrote a book, and I told myself I'm not taking up any projects lower than $95 an hour. That was the end of 2013. Then I spent some time working at that hourly rate, and I think a year after that, or something like that, I said, great, now let's switch to daily. And I said, nothing lower than $950 per day. And it worked. And it's been working a while. And then I did a few more great things, wrote another couple books. And then I said, let's be $1,450 per day. And that's what I'm working at now. I know it's a hell of a lot of money, but there are still people paying for it. And I can spend more time doing my own stuff because there are less clients. And it's amazing work. That's a short story. And it goes long way from $16 per hour towards something much better. What about you?
Yeah, well, I'll tell a similar story. I started on freelancer.com. So we started on those job sites. And like I mentioned, it was a whole pricing struggle on those sites. And as I mentioned, my point of reference was a regular job. So I just arbitrarily made up $25 an hour. I thought that was pretty good. I thought, okay, $25 an hour, not bad. That's more than, or about the same as what I've got working in corporate job. And I just doubled that and said 50, because I thought that was reasonable. $50 an hour, you know, I thought that was reasonable because there were people who were charging 75. So
yeah.
oh, I'm nowhere near them. I'm 50. I'm good, right? You know, that's my thought. That's my thought there. And I literally just took my hourly rate and multiplied it by how many hours I wanted to specifically work in a given day. So I would tend to say 6 to 8 hours. So a lot of times it ended up being 300 or so, at least for a daily rate. But because I was trying to impress clients even though that's what I charge as a daily rate, I definitely worked more than 6 hours just trying to put things together and impress people. But then that went back to me saying, okay, am I giving too much away? You know, that was a question I had when working on that daily rate.
I totally fall on the same trap, but since I charge a ton, it probably, like, I'd spend 2 days working on that, maybe half something. But, you know, there is one thing. Typically, you, on, like, the highest productive day, if you sit down and do 4 to 6 hours of work, that's going to be super awesome. So it's really hard to judge how much a day is. It's more like the mental thing in your mind. You think, yeah, that sounds like a day's worth of work. I think I shipped good enough. That's it. Something like that.
No, you're right. You're right. Some days are more productive than others. And some days in a 6 to 8 hour block of time, you may get very far. Some days it might have been heavy research or concepting or, you know, different things of that nature. So not every day is created equal, not just like every hour is not created equal. So at least for me, that also led me to think, what else can I do to still get rewarded? Because especially with dealing with design and creating something, I know for me, I can't like force myself to be inspired. I have to look around, think about their goals, and just continually compare things and try things. And then I get inspired and I understand what I'm going to do. So for me to sit down and say, in 3 days, I will get inspired, that's very hard. So, yeah. So the daily rate made me think of how can I get a larger amount of income so I have more time to think about their project.
Totally, totally. When it comes to flat pricing, I have one secret that allows for successful pricing, which is price tiers. What do you think of that?
I love price tiers. I think price tiers. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of pricing tiers, it really appeals to pricing psychology, which is why people buy. And pricing tiers, they help anchor people's decision, and they change it from, should I work with the freelancer, yes or no, to what option should I select?
Right,
and this is nothing new. I mean, you go to the grocery store, they do that all the time to us. You're in the grocery store, it says, do you want one banana or do you want 10 bananas for $5? And you're like, wow, should I get these bananas? But you didn't even go in there for bananas. So, but the price is changing your mindset. So, I definitely believe in that. I think one tier should be exactly what you want to offer. And then the next tier should be what you wanted to offer plus a bonus or plus consulting or plus an evaluation period, something you should offer. So I agree with pricing tiers. The only drawback I saw of pricing tiers, at least for me, where I had clients trying to negotiate and get more. So they would choose one thing, but they wanted to negotiate and try to pick something from a higher tier and add it in for free or something. So there was some negotiating, but at least they're still saying yes to me. Even if they're negotiating, they're still saying, yes, I won the project. So pricing tiers did what they were supposed to.
Yep. You just mentioned a very important thing, which is negotiation. And number one piece of advice to everybody is never negotiate on your rate or on the price that you declare. You can negotiate on scope and on value.
True.
But you never say like, oh, you just asked for a discount, so I'm going to charge you $70 instead of $90 per hour or something like that. That's a race to the bottom.
I would agree. Now, I will say, if you have worked with a client for multiple times and they're asking for something as a common courtesy, maybe you want to gift it to them. I don't see a problem with that. Maybe if you work with a client and over the span, like I have a client I've worked with, over the span of our relationship, you've paid me more than $30,000. If you ask for my opinion on something, I don't mind giving that to you. You're a valuable client, but you've proven yourself. You never want to throw in or discount to someone that is a brand new client or anything of that nature. Because, you know, as Jane just mentioned, it's a race to the bottom. and they're in a sense devaluing you, at least on the onset. So you definitely don't want that to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we need to wrap up this exciting conversation. If you were to give a piece of advice to designers that have trouble pricing their services, what would be one thing they should do and one thing they should avoid?
Okay, I'm going to speak like I'm talking to the listener right now.
Exactly.
The designer who's listening right now.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you realize it or not, you are more valuable than you're giving yourself credit for. Because you're a designer, you're in the industry, and you see there's other designers out there, and you know whether your work is good or bad. So you're comparing yourself. That's perfectly fine. But the large majority of the population cannot do what you can do. So even though it feels like designers are a dime a dozen, compared to the population, they really are not. So you do have something to offer, and you are valuable. I would like to challenge you in thinking about your pricing to take a step back and write out all the skills you know how to do. And what I mean by this is I sold myself short as a web designer because I don't think I really captured what I was doing. But when I took a step back and started writing out my skills, I really had a lot to offer as a web designer. I had user interface experience. I had color theory experience. I had conversion rate optimization experience. I had a little bit of writing experience. And I even had a little bit of behavioral psychology experience. And all of these I was putting into my designs, but I did not call them out for its own unique skill. So you say, oh, I'm a designer. Saying you're a designer doesn't capture everything that I just said. Behavioral psychology? That's important, but you never hear anyone talk like that. So I would challenge you as a designer to look at your skills and think about and write them out so you can see it, the number of skills that you've learned. Or, if you're just beginning, write out the number of skills that you wish you can learn and you need to start learning. So that's one thing. So whatever you're charging, if you write out all those skills and you're charging $100 for all those skills, it's not high enough. And it's not about doubling your rate or just charging more. It's about being rewarded for the value that you provide. So that's one thing I would say to a designer of what you need to do, just to recognize your skills and realize and start asking yourself the question, am I charging enough? The thing that you need to watch out and avoid is don't create something or design. I mentioned this earlier. Don't create something or design something just to look pretty, just to look nice. What you're doing has to solve a problem. So the better you can define the problem you're solving, the better you can speak to the end result and how it actually solves that problem. There are times where I've created something for a client and they were like, well, I don't know if I'm not sure what. And I have to remind them, this solves the problem in these five ways. If you can prove to me how this does not solve the problem, I could do something else. But it solved the problem. They gave it a try and it worked. So take away the subjectivity and start to root it in solving a problem. That's what I would say.
This is beautiful. I just love how inspiring this speech is. This is amazing.
Oh,
thank you, Nathan.
No, thank you for having me.
Where can people find you online?
Yeah, you can go to NathanAlote.com, and my first name is Nathan, N-A-T-H-A-N, last name Alote, A-L-L-O-T-E-Y.com, and once you're there, you'll see that I have a podcast where I talk about freelancing, and you'll also see details on the course and the book that I've been writing as well. So yeah, NathanAlote.com, and my social media profiles are there as well.
Great. You mentioned before when we talked prior to the conversation that you have a discount for our listeners. Do you?
Oh, yeah, I do. I do, most definitely. As I mentioned, the course I'm working on is called Freelance Jumpstart, so freelancejumpstart.com. The whole course is about the business of freelancing, and you can use a coupon. UI Breakfast is the coupon, so the name of this podcast is the very same coupon. And once you go there, it will give you a discount on the actual course. Now, I'm actually crazy for offering a discount because someone looked at what I built and they said, this doesn't need to be discounted. So I'm actually giving away probably too much, but it's something that I wanted to offer to the listeners of this podcast, just so that you all can get the value that's there. So right now you can hop on the launch list and that will lock you in for that as well. But I'm going to extend the discount for any listeners of this podcast. So
thank you so much. That's super generous. And by the way, one more tip for pricing products, not services, but products which are more, that don't require your personal thing. You can charge them higher so that you can always give generous discounts. So perfect strategy.
True. Yeah. You said it. If there's more margin in a sense built in, you're okay with the discount because you know ultimately the reward or the return you're getting when everybody makes a purchase. So yeah, good point.
All right, Nathan, thank you so much for joining us today. This was super valuable to get, you know, specific pricing advice specifically for designers. And
thank you for having me.
I hope your book and the course are a blast.
Yeah, definitely. So it would be. So we're going to have fun with that for sure.
Okay, thank you, Nathan. Have a wonderful day.
All right, you as well.